Hello and welcome to the Arizona Capital Times on Sun Sounds. My name is John Coe. I am in Flagstaff and I will be your volunteer reader for today, reading articles that were published in the Arizona Capital Times on or about December 6th, 2024. Headline: Maricopa County Republicans say transportation ballot measure fell short of vote threshold to pass. Written by Kira Riley and published in the Arizona Capital Times on December 4th, 2024. Maricopa County Republicans are asking a judge to kill the county's latest version of a long-running transportation sales tax, given the failure to reach 60% voter approval. Initially adopted in 1985 as Proposition 300, continued in 2004 as Proposition 400, and passed in 2024 as Proposition 479, the county's half-cent transportation sales tax has continued to fund freeway, public transit, and arterial street projects for nearly four decades. An election contest filed November 30th by the Maricopa County Republican Committee claims the latest extension on transportation infrastructure funding cannot stand under a 2022 measure, which requires 60% voter approval on tax-related referendums. According to official election results, the measure fell short of the 60% threshold with 59.83% of voter approval. The suit was initially met with scrutiny from Prop 479 supporters, given Prop 479 did not change the sales tax itself, but rather how the funds are distributed. But some say the lawsuit still has a fighting chance, as the proposition missed, albeit only by 0.17% of the threshold set out in 2022 in a constitutional amendment. In the complaint filed on November 30th, the MCRC, represented by attorney Brian Blem, claimed Proposition 479 must fail given a 2022 legislature referral, Proposition 132, which requires any measure under which the referendum is applied shall be referred to a vote of the qualified electors, and for the initiative and referendum to approve a tax shall become law when approved by 60% of the votes cast thereon. Blem asked for the court to decertify the measure and wrote, quote, Proposition 479 did not receive 60% of the vote, and the Arizona Constitution provides no provisions for rounding up to achieve the 60% requirement. The lawsuit to walk back Proposition 479 named Secretary of State Adrian Fontes, the Maricopa County Board of Supervisors, and the Maricopa County Treasurer's Office. Connect Maricopa, the committee that worked to pass Proposition 479, filed a motion to intervene Wednesday. David Martin, president of the Arizona chapter of the Associated General Contractors Association, said the association was considering intervening in the suit as well. Quote, "It's the will of the voters. They want to preempt the will of the voters," Martin said. "A small group of partisans, a micro-minority of partisans, want to upend the will of the voters." But others rose to the lawsuit's defense, claiming the proposition missed the clear-cut threshold set out by the new law. Representative Alexander Kolodin said, quote, "I don't understand why it's frivolous. A referendum to approve a tax must get a 60% to pass, and it didn't get 60% of the votes. Therefore, it didn't pass." Proposition 479 is not a new tax. Proposition 300 was passed by the voters in 1985 and established the 20-year half-cent sales tax to finance freeways. In 2004, the legislature renewed it as Proposition 400, with 56.2% going to freeway and highways, 10.5% going to arterial street projects, and 33.3% going toward public transit. With a 2026 deadline, the legislature first started to tool with a Proposition 400 extension in 2022 and sent a version that would allocate 37.4% to freeways and highways, 22.2% to arterial street programs, and 40.4% to public transit. But Governor Doug Ducey vetoed the bill, writing in his veto letter his concerns with high inflation, biased language in the ballot measure description, and troubling election dates. Proposition 400 returned to the ballot in the 2023 session and was greenlit by Governor Katie Hobbs after a lengthy negotiation with Republican leadership. Senate President Warren Peterson, a Republican from Gilbert, dubbed it the, quote, "most conservative Proposition 400 plan in Arizona history," noting a block on funds for expansion of light rail, commuter rail, trolleys, and streetcars, and it put a kibosh on the proposed expanded Capital Loop and an increase in the cut going to roads and freeway projects. As passed by voters in 2024, Proposition 479 would keep the same half-cent sales tax, but dedicate 40.5% to freeways and highways, 22.5% to arterial roads, and 37% to transit. According to the Maricopa Association of Governments, the plan is projected to generate $14.9 billion in revenue. Martin noted, though, the consequences of the claim. If the claim is successful, quote, we'd probably come to gridlock. Think about that. The system is incredibly important to the economy, and this specific extension is integral to connecting people and goods and services, period, Martin said. If a small group of people want to upend that, shame on them. Headline: Grant could help free wrongfully convicted prisoners. Written by Howard Fisher for the Arizona Capital Times and published on December 9, 2024. A $1.5 million grant to the University of Arizona Innocence Project could help some now in prison get a chance to have their convictions thrown out. Quote, right now, our intake backlog just of people who have applied directly to the clinic is over 300 waiting for review, said Virginia Morris, a staff attorney with the project. She said the new dollars will help get through that list in the next 3 years. Still, Morris acknowledged, there are always more applications coming in. Quote, it always feels like we're digging ourselves out of a hole, she said, but the more that we can tackle, the better. These new dollars come from the United States Department of Justice, and what they will do, said Morris, is allow the University of Arizona Innocence Project, which has been around for a decade, to focus on the issues of scientific evidence which could prove someone is not guilty of the crime that put them behind bars. Quote, DNA testing and investigation of those cases is incredibly expensive, said Morris, and that could just be the beginning. Then there's the need to consult with experts, quote, and maybe even to testify in cases should we produce exculpatory results from the DNA test. What the program generally focuses on are not the high-profile death penalty cases that make headlines. Quote, it's not because there's some rule making them ineligible for our clinic's review, said Morris, but she said these defendants tend to have adequate and robust help through the Tucson-based Arizona Capital Representation Project, which is funded largely through grants and similar operations by others focused on capital cases. Quote, most of the people who reach out to us don't have access to such lawyers, Morris said. What the University of Arizona Innocence Project tends to concentrate on instead are those convicted of murder but who have not been sentenced to die and are instead serving life terms, and those serving time for sexual assaults. And the key, she said, is that these kinds of cases, where evidence may be available but may not have been considered at the time of trial. That includes DNA. Morris said there's reason to believe that could prove crucial to getting people out of prison. Quote, I've seen a number as high as 4% to 6% of people who have been convicted wrongfully because they are factually innocent, she said. Quote, a lot of people think that number is exaggerated, Morris continued, and it may be, but even a quarter of that, that's still an astronomical number in terms of individuals who are incarcerated who did not commit the crimes that they were convicted of. And there's another statistical reason that would suggest that there are people behind bars in Arizona who should not be there. According to the University of Arizona Innocence Project, there have been only 3 documented cases in the state where DNA has exonerated an inmate since 1989, despite advances in testing, which have led to a rising number of exonerations nationally. It all starts with screening. Morris said there are probably about 100 requests a year that come in. Quote, some of those we, the attorneys, don't even see because we have a very helpful University of Arizona clinic staff that will kind of screen out the cases that are just not appropriate for our clinic because they don't meet our eligibility requirements, she said. At the very least, Morris said, the applicants actually have to claim that they are innocent, and cases that originate with crimes from outside the state also don't qualify. For what's left, the most common way to get these cases into court is what's called a petition for post-conviction relief. Quote, that's after an individual has been convicted and they've done their direct appeal, Morris explained, but she said there are rules that do allow for a case to be reopened. Quote, the main one for people who are seeking an exoneration is a requirement that they come forward with new evidence, said Morris. That includes actual evidence of innocence or any kind of evidence which would suggest that if the evidence had been known at trial, that they wouldn't have been convicted or maybe they would have received a lesser sentence. That's the kind of evidence that DNA can provide. The next step is to ask a court for a hearing to look at the new evidence to see whether the conviction can be summarily overturned or at least the person can be granted a new trial. And if there is a hearing, an attorney from the U of A Innocence Project will go into court on behalf of the inmate. There's one other claim that can come up in a petition for post-conviction relief. The defendant did not have adequate assistance of legal counsel. Quote, we see that all the time, said Morris. But she noted that inmates who make that claim must be very careful. Quote, in almost every case that we review, the individual who's applying for our assistance has already filed their own petition for post-conviction relief, and they've raised issues of ineffective assistance of counsel, Morris said. Quote, what's difficult about that is you get only one bite at the ineffective assistance of counsel apple in Arizona post-conviction motions, she said. What that means, said Morris, is that an inmate may actually bring the U of A Innocence Project a credible claim that his or her attorney did not do an adequate job. Quote, but if they were already raised in the first petition for post-conviction relief, we can't really raise them again, even if we maybe are able to articulate more helpfully, she said. We're out of luck there. You're listening to the Arizona Capital Times on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Sun Sounds of Arizona has been providing information access since 1979, and you can always listen to our live stream at sunsounds.org. Headline, Magistrate, Firing Squad May Be Most Humane Way to Execute Prisoners. Written by Howard Fisher for the Arizona Capital Times and published on December 2, 2024. The former federal magistrate who Governor Katie Hobbs hired to study the execution process said on Wednesday that he was dismissed because he was telling the governor something she did not want to hear. There is no humane way to kill someone with a lethal injection. Quote, she asked me to find out what went wrong with the previous injections, which resulted in perceptions widely held that they were botched, said David Duncan. And he said that included whether lethal injections can be safely used, quote, and make recommendations on that point. More specifically, the executive order issued by Hobbs shortly after she took office in January 2023 sought review of protocols for execution by injection, including inserting the lines to administer the drugs and transparency. It also sought information on training of staff and experience in carrying out executions. What Duncan said he found in an outline that had been submitted is that the methods used to put inmates to death being humane as was promoted when lethal injections were authorized by voters are far from it. And what complicates all that, he said, is the state-sanctioned secrecy that surrounds it all. Quote, she asked me to increase transparency, he told Capital Media Services on Wednesday, the day after he got a call from the governor's office saying his services were no longer needed. Quote, and I prepared a report that I thought would do that, Duncan said. And it's ironic that a report that was designed to increase transparency was terminated on the eve of its disclosure. Hobbs, in her letter to Duncan on Tuesday, said he had gone far afield of her directive to, quote, focus on procurement protocols and procedures related to carrying out an execution under existing law. And exhibit number one from the governor was his suggestion that if Arizona wants to continue to put inmates to death, the most humane way would be a firing squad, something he said would avoid all the mistakes and problems that have led to multiple reports of inmates suffering as staffers had problems administering fatal drugs. But Duncan said that proposal fits squarely within the central question that Hobbs presented to him. Review the death penalty procedures, including the experience of the staff at the Department of Corrections, Rehabilitation, and Reentry to conduct executions. In fact, that's exactly what she said when announcing an independent review. Quote, recent executions have been embroiled in controversy, the governor said in January 2023. There were reports that prison employees had repeated problems in placing the intravenous line into the veins of the condemned men. Quote, the death penalty is a controversial issue to begin with, Hobbs continued. We just want to make sure the practices are sound and that we don't end up with a botched execution like we've seen recently. Duncan said that's what he delivered. Quote, I don't think they wanted to hear that, he said. Quote, I think they wanted me to say everything was fine, Duncan said, and I could not say that. He said any discussion needs to start with the question of whether the procedure is humane. Voters in 1992 approved lethal injection for execution. Prior to that, the state-approved method was the gas chamber, but in its first use that year since 1976, it took 11 minutes for Donald Harding to die, prompting a call for an alternative. In the ensuing years, the state had issues legally finding the proper drugs, including an ill-fated effort by the Department of Corrections in 2015 to buy 1,000 vials of sodium thiopental from a supplier in India, only to have those drugs seized by Customs and Border Protection. Arizona began executions again in 2022. The process in the first, Duncan said, took about 40 minutes to complete, inserting the intravenous line. Ultimately, the execution team had to cut into Clarence Dixon's groin area, a process that one media observer said resulted in a fair amount of blood. Two more executions were conducted in 2022, with reports in both cases of problems with the team getting in functioning IV lines. It was against that backdrop that Hobbs made her January 2023 announcement, appointing an independent reviewer, and fellow Democrat Attorney General Chris Mays, also newly elected, agreeing not to seek any warrants of execution until that review was done. Duncan said the idea of using lethal injections is seen by the public as no different than what happens when they have to put a beloved pet to sleep. Quote, it's seamless, and it's perfect, and it works every time, he said, and there was no reason for us as people 40 years ago, when this was adopted, to think it would not be a humane method that's equivalent to what happens with our dogs. But that equivalency, he said, is false. First is that the company which manufactures the drugs used by veterinarians won't allow them to be sold to the state for executions. More problematic, he said, is who performs the procedures. Quote, the medical personnel who are best suited to do this are not allowed to be anywhere near it because the American Board for Anesthesiologists will withdraw the board certification for any anesthesiologist who participates in an execution, he said. And the American Medical Association's Code of Ethics says that, quote, a member of a profession dedicated to preserving life, when there is hope of doing so, a physician must not participate in a legally authorized execution. Quote, so you're very much restricted on finding the appropriate personnel to be able to do it, Duncan said, and that has led also to the botches. There's another flaw, he said. Quote, in the world of execution, it is so secretive that no best practices ever emerge, no mistakes are ever shared, no lessons are ever learned or shared with other people, he said. Quote, the hope that we have in our administrative state that when we turn over decisions to agencies that they will get good at things just does not happen because nobody ever studies it internally, said Duncan, and they don't share whatever they learned, even if they did. He called it a, quote, siloed environment that breeds errors and flawed practices that hobble lethal injections. Such secrecy in government is not desirable nor normal, said Duncan. And his draft outline reported a related problem, the lack of oversight, mentioning corrections officials seeking to learn on the eve of an execution what doses of lethal drugs to administer from Wikipedia. All that, he said, is what led to the suggestion that if the state is going to execute someone, there are more humane ways to do it. Quote, we have a perfectly safe way of putting someone in a chair and put a target adjusted a little bit to the left, and then having 6 to 12 people shoot at the same time, said Duncan. Quote, that person will be out of consciousness in under a second and dead, probably in two, he said, in comparison to the more lengthy and apparently painful procedures that are now used for lethal injections. Hobbs, for her part, said on Tuesday that Duncan's not-yet-completed report is no longer necessary. She said Ryan Thorndell, her choice to head the prison system, has now completed his own review of the execution process. That report lays out a series of changes from revised training requirements to extensive documentation of all aspects of the process. Quote, with these changes in place, ADCRR is prepared to conduct an execution which complies with the legal requirements if an execution warrant is issued, the governor said. Christian Slater, the governor's press aide, echoed that when asked on Wednesday about Duncan's concerns. Quote, ADCRR has conducted a thorough review of the policies and procedures and made critical improvements to help ensure executions carried out by the state meet legal and constitutional standings, he said. And Slater said his boss, quote, remains committed to upholding the law while ensuring that justice is carried out in a way that is transparent and humane. But Slater did not answer a question of whether the governor believes the way the state is now executing inmates fits her definition of what is humane. Mays, however, said she is satisfied by the review Thorndell wrote and is now ready to start seeking warrants of execution for the 25 individuals currently on death row who have exhausted all their appeals. And Richie Taylor, her press aide, said his boss believes executions using the current method can be carried out humanely. There actually is another option. The 1992 law authorizing lethal injection also left in place the ability of inmates who already had been sentenced to instead choose the gas chamber. The last inmate to choose that was Walter LeGrand in 1999. Still, there are some that remain on death row who are eligible for that option, and the state did spend some money several years ago refurbishing the gas chamber, replacing the seals on the chamber's hatch door, and buying materials to make hydrogen cyanide gas. Duncan said that it has its own issues, and he said it hardly fits the definition of humane. Quote, not only is it wrong as a way of killing somebody because it is heinous, he said, it's what the Nazis did, Duncan said. I just don't think we should be doing that and suffocating people in a painful death like that. Headline, state gets $34.8 million grant to expand charter schools, written by Howard Fisher for the Arizona Capital Times and published on December 4th, 2024. Arizona is getting $34.8 million in federal funds to help create and expand charter schools in the state. Under the program, up to $300,000 would be available to nonprofit organizations hoping to set up a new charter school as an alternative to traditional public schools. Funds also would be available to existing charter schools to expand their operations. State Schools Chief Tom Horn, whose agency is administering the grant, figures that amount of money is in the grant is enough to establish 24 new charter schools and expand an additional 23, which is enough, he figures, to serve about 10,000 students. The idea, according to Mark Francis, who works with the State Department of Education on charter issues, is not to permanently subsidize these schools, but instead to get them on their feet. He said that includes everything from hiring specialists to plan the program to buying the necessary chairs and desks. But Francis said that once operating, they are expected to be self-supporting with the aid that they get from the state. Charters, which are technically public schools in Arizona, get an average of $9,313 per student in state funds, according to the Department of Education. That compares with $8,086 for traditional public school students. On one hand, the state does not fund transportation expenditures for charter schools, but the state does provide some additional dollars to charter schools because, unlike traditional public schools, they cannot seek to raise local taxes. In both cases, however, the schools may not charge tuition. Francis said not just anyone who hopes to open a charter school is eligible. Aside from screening applications for their qualifications to operate a school, he said the conditions of the funds, which are set by the federal government, require that the school be designed to serve, quote, educationally disadvantaged communities. Francis said this means that 30% of students come from homes which qualify for free or reduced price meals, or the same percentage are from minority communities. He also said that schools designed to serve children with special needs, such as those with autism or another disability, would also qualify. What that also means, Francis said, is that these funds are open to many different geographic areas of the state. The additional dollars to open more charter schools come as many traditional schools are struggling with declining enrollments. Some districts are even being forced to shutter schools. Horn, however, said he does not see the expansion of the charter school system, there are more than 600 charter schools in Arizona, as the cause of those changes. Quote, "The charter schools in Arizona go back to the 1990s, he said, and Horn, who said he was a champion of charter schools when he was a state legislator, said they serve a legitimate purpose. Quote, "Even a good district school may not necessarily meet the needs of all students," he said, "and so the parents should have the ability to find a school that does meet those needs. And just like traditional schools, any student can apply, with charter operators unable to set admission requirements. But traditional schools cannot turn away students who live within their district. Charter operators, however, can limit admissions using a lottery system to determine who gets in. Still, there are some differences. A person does not need to be a certified teacher to work at a charter school, though the law bars a charter school from hiring someone whose teaching certificate has been surrendered or revoked. Francis said applications are available now for those wishing to apply for a grant. He said the process is designed so that, if approved, a new or expanded school could be open by this coming August. You've been listening to the Arizona Capital Times, a production of Sun Sounds of Arizona and Flagstaff. Once again, my name is John Coe. Thank you for listening.